Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Amira.
And I'm Aphrodite.
And for our very first podcast episode ever, we will be dishing about the season 2 premiere of The Bold Type. But first, we would like to introduce ourselves. So, Aphrodite, tell us about yourself.
I am Aphrodite. I use she, her pronouns. I'm proud Gaysian. I'm hella queer. I dabble a little bit in drag and cosplay, but my real passion is fangirling on Tumblr. I lurked for years before I finally started getting into, I guess, the mess of being in Women Who Love Women fandoms, and I'm really excited to get messy with you all on this podcast.
Ooh, yes. Well, I am Amira. I am also a proud woman of color. I am a queerub, I believe is the term, queer arrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I like that.
I've seen that around on Tumblr because, like Aphrodite, I am also on Tumblr, and it's actually because of Aphrodite that I am on Tumblr.
I know. I'm sorry, but you're welcome.
Yeah, it's a begrudging thank you, but I do thank you nonetheless. I am also a huge fangirl, and actually it was my fangirl spirit that first brought Aphrodite and I together on a fateful Midwestern summer night.
Oh my goodness. That it was.
Yes, it was. It was. At our local gay bar, we locked eyes across the table when we found out that both of us loved Xena Warrior Princess.
I think specifically, someone was having a separate conversation with me, and I said, you know who's hot? Lucy Lawless. And then both of us just, our eyes just like whipped around and we made direct eye contact. And it was like, wait, are you? Are you? And it was like a guess of, are you a Xenite? Because I'm a Xenite. Are you a Xenite? Are you like a Xena fan who watched casually, or do you know the episodes by name?
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it became that sort of like that gradual courtship.
And our friendship grew and blossomed from there.
Amira, you were my fangirl bestie.
Like we were my fangirl bestie.
I know. We went to XenaCon together. We went to KlexiCon together. We are now a con-going duo. If we're going to like declare each other fangirl besties, I should do it on a podcast.
Yes. And that is, of course, the sole purpose of this podcast, for us to declare our fangirl love for each other. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, but really, why are we doing this podcast?
Great question. We constantly have conversations where we talk about whatever show we're binging. And, you know, as queer women of color, we are constantly seeking that representation. So we decided we wanted to make a podcast to talk about representation of queer women of color in media, specifically film and television. Also just, you know, any sort of intersection of queerness and race that we find enjoyable to watch and to talk about.
I just see so much information out there about queer women's ships, and I'm always excited about it. But we haven't really seen a very clear POC perspective on a lot of the largely white lesbian ships that get the most discussion and the most buzz on social media. But like, I think The Bold Type is really changing that, because we're seeing Kadena trend on Twitter and Tumblr, and it's been so exciting. And you know, The Bold Type isn't the only show that we watch. We just wrapped up a podcast with Aaron, who runs the Ship It Real Good podcast. We had an entire debrief of Evita on Stars, and if you haven't watched it, you absolutely should.
You should watch it, and you are allowed to get excited about it, because it was recently announced that they did get renewed for a second season.
So Vita is another show that we watch. We used to watch Supergirl, but we don't anymore. I don't even know if we need to go into that.
It was a sad goodbye, and that's really all that needs to be said about that.
Yes.
Another show that I've been watching that I've been trying to get Aphrodite to start on, and I don't know if you have yet, is...
Okay, I watched all of the latest season, okay?
It is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which, in my opinion, has amazing queer representation, now in the form of a bisexual Latina named Rosa Diaz, played by the lovely Stephanie Beatrice.
We both watched the first season of Black Lightning with Nefessa Williams.
Yes.
We both are in love with One Day at a Time on Netflix. Ooh. I can't believe we live in this grand year of 2018.
Yes.
Where we get so many different types of representation. We are seeing way more queer ships in television than we ever have before. In history, maybe? It's just remarkable that we get to, at this point in time, pick and choose.
And it's amazing that these are consistent characters, too, you know, where their queerness is represented from the first season, a lot of times in the first episode, and, you know, we don't have to, like, slough our way through, like, four seasons of hetero nonsense before we finally get to one queer character who has, like, one coming out episode, and then it's not mentioned again for, like, another season, and then they get one date with someone, and then it's not mentioned again for another season, you know? I can't really deal with those shows. I don't have the patience for it.
And the great thing about the bold type, Kat is a Black queer woman. Mm-hmm. And not just that she's a Black queer woman, she's dating a Muslim lesbian and a character that was recurring in season one and is now a series regular. They turned her into a series regular because Adina was that popular. Kadena was the trending hashtag. Nobody cares about the other ships because we just care about Kat and Adina and how exciting it is to see an interracial lesbian relationship. Something that, like, that I guess I've written about and Amir and I have talked about is the lack of interracial relationships between queer women where neither of the women is white.
Yes, yes. It's very rare.
So it's very rare. So why don't we, like, go ahead and jump into what we thought of the premiere, and maybe we can start with the storyline for Kat and then talk about Jane and Sutton and the other characters after that.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good. So for everybody listening, just so that you know, spoilers ahead, we are talking about the season two, 2-hour premiere. So technically the first and second episode. So if you haven't seen both of them, you may want to go watch it and then tune back in. Yeah, let's talk about Kat.
At the end of season one, Kat goes for the girl. She goes after the girl. And then they go and travel the world together, and then they come back, and it's so clear that Kat is wildly in love with Adina. And the first episode, she's just, like, so proud, wants to shout from the rooftops, and Adina is sort of, like, is a little bit, like, hesitant. She's like, why are you being so, you know, physically affectionate at work and in public? Why are you trying to show me off? And then we find out towards the end of the first episode that Adina is confused by Kat's excitement about their relationship when Kat is still reluctant to go down on her.
Yep. Woo! Which was a shocker of a reveal. I mean, hilarious, but
I did not expect that at all. At all. I did not see that coming. Watching that first episode was just like, oh my God. They are talking about cunnilingus on Freeform. Okay.
I know.
This is formerly ABC Family, and we're talking about cunnilingus. Yeah. What? And so there's a scene where she actually says to Kat, I've been craving you all day.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Like this Muslim lesbian, a hijabi, who wants her girlfriend to go down on her. I love it. I don't think we've seen anything like this on television before. To me, this felt really
bad. For sure, no. We haven't. Yeah. And even before then, there was a scene where she said, how about we finish what we started? You know, which my girlfriend claims is when she called it and said that that's what it was all along, and I didn't see it coming for, like, I mean, even up until she said the line, I thought she was going to say something else. I thought that Adina was going to say, you know, something along the lines of, like, you know, you really want to show me off, but I feel like we're not, like, really spending as much time together. It's like you just kind of want to show that you're in a relationship without really being in one, because, you know, Kat kept kind of blowing her off throughout the episode. First she had to rush off to help Sutton when Adina came out to, you know, have lunch with her at work. And, you know, if we're being honest, like, Kat, you did not have to go. Sutton was fine. You could have just gone and checked on her real quick and then just had lunch with Adina. But, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And then they had to go to this Scarlet whatever party. And Adina just kind of wanted to stay home, which, you know, I get that Kat feels, like, obligated to go out. But it's like, you just came back from this big trip. Like, you know, a night in at home doesn't sound so bad.
I mean, Kat is a mess. Kat is a mess. She's just, like, she is a gaby if I ever saw one, okay? Like, Adina's been there, done that. She's been, like, queer, like super queer for a super long time. She, like, had an ex-girlfriend named Coco. You know, she's, like, she's done all this, and she decided to, like, get serious with this formerly straight girl, okay? So, like, part of me is like, Adina, really? I understand why Adina has doubts. Like, she has doubts about Kat's physical attraction to her. And, like, it's not just about the cunnilingus. It's about Adina having some insecurities about whether Kat is actually truly queer for her. Or whether Kat is ready to, like, I be physical in that way. It's like that when they had that conversation on the couch and Adina says, remember our first conversation when you said you could never do that? And she like sort of waves her hand around her crotch area.
Yeah. she could, you know, she couldn't even say it when she originally
had that conversation. And so I understand why Adina was sort of like, okay, like hold your horses. Like, I know we had an amazing several weeks together traveling the world and we're living this grand queer fantasy, but what if you're not actually ready for this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that a lot of queer women who date someone who is just coming out and realizing their queerness, you know, with you, a lot of people can relate to that. You know, you kind of have these like hesitations of like, well, you know, you're still figuring things out. Like, is this for real? Is this something that I also want to invest in? So I think we see Adina going through that, but she is so patient. I mean, she really loves Kat.
Oh my God.
I know. And I have to pause here just to inform our listeners of any potential bias you may hear. Aphrodite technically does not consider herself a Kadena shipper because she is so jealous of Kat. She wants to be the one dating Adina instead of Kat.
Yes. I mean, I would not call myself a Kadena shipper because the only person I ship Adina with is me.
Yeah.
That is the only person Adina should be with is me. Okay.
Adina is your dream girl, to be fair. Even before this character graced the screen, I mean, everything that I know about you and everything you've said to me before, like, culminates in this person. This is the person for you. So I don't blame you at all.
But she's such a catch. And she's emotionally mature. She knows herself. She knows how to talk about difficult things. Mm-hmm, she's compassionate. Mm-hmm. She's thoughtful. She's intelligent. She's creative. And like, Kat is sort of like, she's putting on a show. Kat likes to put on a show that she's got all her shit together, but like inside she's like a mess. And like, we see that in episode 2.
Yes.
Where Kat is finally confronting after 20 plus years of being on Earth, the fact that she's Black. Kat is still figuring out, well, who am I as a biracial person?
So let's back up a little bit. So episode 2 opens with another amazing scene, considering again that this is on Freeform, where Kat is like going to dish to Jane and Sutton, who are so excited to hear how everything went, which I really love about this group of friends is that throughout Kat's coming out experience, they never shied away. You know, they still want to like hear all the gossip and talk about everything exactly the same as they did before. So apparently Kat did go down on Adina and it was...
Wait, hold on. We saw it. Which was amazing. We saw her going down on her. I can't believe this is Freeform. And we saw Kat going down on Adina. I mean, this is just like, boom. I feel like this is kind of explosive. I feel like this is a turning point for... I guess queer women representation on like a family channel, Freeform, formerly ABC Family. We see like two queer women of color having sex, and one of them goes down on the other. I'm just like, wow.
It is just the gayest thing that they could.
It's like they took all my expectations for season 2 and then like dropped a bomb in it. Like, no, we're gonna like get, like anything just you thought you we were wait. Gonna give you. Yeah, like just you wait. You thought this season was gonna get gay. Boom, this season premiere.
Yeah.
It's like gayer than you ever imagined. Not only are they going down on each other, they're processing too.
Yes.
They're processing the cunnilingus. So it's not just like is Kat going to go down on Adina? They're going to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. They preface with clear and effective communication about cunnilingus, and then they actually perform it. I mean, if that's not gay, I don't know what is.
Jane and Sutton, good best friends. They debrief with Kat, and then Kat is excited about the fact that she has this new experience.
The first episode focuses on Kat's queerness, and then the second episode focuses on her Blackness. And I just felt like that was like just an amazingly done transition. You know, she's been promoted to, or is she being promoted, or just, I think, because now her
she's
title is
social media head.
Director. Yeah. And so Jacqueline, the wonderful mentor that I would just love to adopt me one day, is assigns her with the task of writing a bio. Alex, one of Kat's coworkers, who is a Black man, suggests that she put in her bio that she's Black. And Kat kind of recoils and doesn't really think that has anything to do with anything and doesn't really want to do it.
So Kat, her mom is white, her dad is Black. Her whole life she's been sort of told, oh, like, it's what's on the inside that matter. Race doesn't matter. And she's not interested in putting the label of, like, I am the first Black female department head at Scarlett. And Alex is like, but what's so bad about that? Why wouldn't you just say it? And it's sort of, it's very revealing, their interactions. And I really appreciate that they're using Alex in this way. And I like that he's sort of like the counterpoint to Kat's experience, and that interaction that they have on the couch where Kat's like, are you questioning my Blackness? Mm-hmm. And then she sort of like shoots back and like criticizes him for wearing khakis.
Yeah.
And like not being Black enough. I felt like people in the writer's room were drawing from their own experiences.
Yeah.
What it's like to not feel Black enough or not feel X enough, to own an identity. The dialogue that not just between Kat and Alex, but also between Kat and her parents, where she's like, why aren't we talking about this? And I just thought that that was probably one of the more realistic portrayals of mixed family dynamic where race is sort of the glossed over thing. I did like that they didn't demonize the parents that perspective of like, oh, race doesn't matter, we don't want to talk about it, we don't want to make it an issue, we just want to be. But I think the way that they brought that up and where Kat is sort of challenging them but also understanding where they came from.
Yeah, you know? and I think that's something that they did really well. There are two things about this plot line that I really applaud the writers on. The first is that, like you said, they presented both choices as valid. You know, they didn't say that it's like one is clearly the right answer and one is clearly the wrong. It was just that, you know, this is a choice some people make. This is a choice other people make. Sometimes people change their minds and, you know, switch to the other choice. And so the second thing I like the most about it is that Kat clearly makes the decision on her own. You know, some people kind of get the wheels turning. Like, you know, Alex sort of questioning her about it. Adina also gives her two cents. And, you know, after she hears from her parents, she kind of comes to her own decision that, you know, her worldview has changed a little bit. And maybe she's fine with proudly saying that she is a Black woman in a bio for something for work at the very least, you know. And so it ends with her including that in her bio that she submits to Jacqueline. And she goes and tells Alex proudly that that's what she ended up doing.
Yeah. The thing that was, really remarkable about this episode is that this story explains Kat's behavior in season one. We finally understand. So in season one, Kat was arrested, okay? Kat was taken away in police custody because somebody said something hateful to Adina, and Adina ran off because she was afraid. She was afraid about her ability to stay in the U.S. She was afraid as like a woman who wears a hijab. She was afraid as an out lesbian. And she sort of like the Kat got into a physical altercation with some guy who was harassing Adina in the street. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Kat hit the guy and a police officer rolled up, Kat was arrested. Kat looked around and didn't see Adina anywhere. And Adina had run off. And, like, this was where Adina, like, definitely fucked up, right? Like, she should have checked in on Kat. But, like, that whole episode when it was sort of painted as, oh, Adina's the one who needed to be afraid of interacting with the police. Mm-hmm. When we also know that Kat is a Black woman. Her life was in danger. As soon as the police rolled up, she could have died. She could have been killed by the police. Yeah. She could have been killed in jail. And there was no real acknowledgement of that by the show or by Kat herself. Kat never said, why did you abandon me, Adina? I'm a Black woman and my life is in danger whenever the police interact with me. I think this explains why we didn't get a conversation about Kat's Blackness in season one.
Yeah.
And I think that was my biggest beef, actually, with season one, that we didn't get any acknowledgement of the fact that Kat's Black. Now we know why. There's like sort of a motivation from the character as to why her race was never brought up. It's because she was taught to never bring it up in the first place.
No, I totally agree. That's a really good point, actually, bringing that up, because, you know, they didn't directly address it in the season, but I am sure that the writers were thinking about that. I don't think that's something that was, you know, just left off people's minds when they were writing that in the first season.
So I really like this storyline. And to me, even more than the Cunnilingus storyline in episode one, this was a very compelling plot line.
It was compelling.
And not that Jane and Sutton don't have interesting plot lines, but finally addressing Kat's race and having that conversation with her parents, that felt real.
Let's talk about the other two girls in the trio. I personally was really happy to see Sutton's slut-shaming storyline finally pan out in a happy way. Basically, some of the assistants on the design team heard rumors that Sutton had slept with someone, and that's why she was getting preferential treatment. And, you know, they'd been making snide remarks behind her back, and Sutton was getting very self-conscious about, you know, getting good opportunities at work because she felt like people were, you know, thinking that she didn't really deserve it. So finally, she goes to the great mentor, Jacqueline, who basically just gave her like a you do you talk. It was just so well said and well put. Like, I got chills watching that scene. It was really well done.
And it's more than that, because Sutton is clearly someone who cares about her career. Mm-hmm. I will say that in season one, the closing shot for the season finale, it showed Kat on her own at the airport. We got Jane leaving Scarlett with a box. But the closing shot we got of Sutton was of her and Richard in the elevator. And I remember when I saw the elevator scene, I just thought, no. Why does Sutton's storyline have to revolve around a man?
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, come on. Because her two friends, Kat and Jane, they got a storyline that was clearly about their own sort of personal journey.
Yeah.
And Sutton ending up back in the elevator. And so I remember in the first episode of season two, when she admits to having, like, closure sex twice with Richard. I'm like, oh my God, when is Sutton going to like move on? I need her to move on.
I know.
And I will say, for any listeners who are wondering, I'm not a fan of Richard. I feel I'm not. I'm just
no,
not.
No, I'm not either. I think that he plays the double standard of, you know, a guy risking everything for his job versus a girl doing the same. Mm-hmm. Also, in this premiere, we find out that legal changed their policy. And so now people can date anyone else at work, as long as they disclose the relationship to HR. Richard excitedly tells Sutton that this would apply to them, that they would be able to have a relationship not in secret, which is why they broke up the first time, because, you know, they had to keep everything under the covers, literally and figuratively. She still is hesitant because this thing about preferential treatment has already come up, and she feels that this would be a really big blow to her career to be dating someone considerably older than her and who is higher up in the company. And so she kind of brings that up to him, and he just, it's like, he just doesn't get it. And like,
he doesn't get it.
It just blows my mind, because a guy like him could go get a similar high paying job at another company.
Exactly.
And that would just, you know what I mean? Like, if you want Sutton to risk things, like, you have to show that you'd be willing to do the same. And it wouldn't be nearly as big of a risk. Like, I'm sure he loves working at Scarlett and he doesn't want to leave, but like, how much do you love Sutton then? Like, are you willing to do that for her? Because you wouldn't really be blowing your career. You'd still be making a ton of money, have a really great job, and get to date Sutton. So
here's my one dig at the Sutton storyline. The reason why she broke up with him was to protect her reputation, mm-hmm. her professional reputation. But what she should have broken up with him for is his failure to acknowledge that her professional reputation was at greater risk than his.
Yes.
That should have been the reason why they broke
Absolutely.
Up. Absolutely. They're just like cutting Richard so much slack. And I'm just like, dude, this is an older white guy with a ton of money who doesn't want to face any consequence. He mm-hmm. wants his cake and he wants to eat it too. He wants to have the girl, but not have to give up anything. I knew that I didn't like him in season one when he made that comment about what if people found out about them, what would happen to his career. I'm like, bitch, we don't care about your career. We care about Sutton's career. We don't care. You already have too much money. You have too much money.
Like, oh my God. I know. Ugh, he's ridiculous. I'm glad that Sutton, because it seemed like it was really for real this time. I mean, I'm hoping it's not like OTP.
That would hurt me. That would really hurt me if they wound up together, if they became Endgame. Richard would have to transform in such a monumental way in order for me to think that he's good enough for Sutton.
It's not even that. It's just, he's kind of boring. I mean, maybe he would be a great boyfriend. I don't know. But I feel like he's just bland.
If this show wants to call itself feminist, Sutton will not end up with Richard.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. Like, if Sutton ends up with Richard, we cannot say that Sutton's storyline was feminist.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
But before we move on to Jane, I just want to say that Sutton going up to the assistant and straight up calling her out on her slut shaming and calling it slut shaming was great. And I felt like it was such like a succinctly done call out where she was like, hey, this slut shaming thing you've been doing, it's not cool. You need to stop. Okay. Women don't bring each other down in the workplace. We help each other out. And I was
that was amazing.
Damn, mm-hmm. Sutton. That was really good.
That's how it should be done.
Yeah. Because it was in a way of not being, hey, screw you for being like this. It was like, hey, you know what? We should be getting along. So let's try to do that.
Or just treat me like a professional because I am one. Speaking of professionalism, Jane, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. The roller coaster of being at Insight. Jane, I think, is somebody who craves mentorship, right? She is so worried about what Jacqueline's going to think about her vertical at Insight.
Yeah.
That she's still sort of doing pitches, even at this Scarlet cover release party.
Yeah.
And so Jane is craving the sort of mentorship that she realizes she's not going to get at Insight. She's not going to get somebody who's out there to protect her or to look out for her or to help her learn or grow, which is what Jacqueline was doing for her at Scarlet. But now she's treading in dangerous waters and her boss is not there to look out for her. The boss is there to look out for Insight.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it was a total betrayal what she did. So Jane uncovers a story where someone who makes diva cups, she's like giving away a diva cup to a homeless woman for everyone that they sell. And then we come to find out that the homeless women have been getting infections and they've been ending up in the hospital because of those menstrual cups. And Jane wrote a very balanced story talking about how Emma, the CEO of this menstrual cup company, has had to make mistakes on her way to making this company work. And so she was trying to tell a story that didn't involve tearing another woman down. And then her editor at Insight rewrote the story without her permission and then published it again without running it by her. And instead of it being sort of a balanced story, it was an expose causing this woman's company to collapse because all the funding for it went away after that expose was published. Something that a boss should never do to someone more junior.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember seeing some articles that people had tweeted about, you know, how accurate the bold type was compared to, you know, actually working in the media field. And it just, I'm just curious because it blows my mind that the editor could change so much of the content and yet it's still published under the original author's name without their sign off. Is this like a thing that happens at any publication, maybe just smaller ones? I don't know. I mean, it's just, it seems, you know, fraudulent to me. Like it's kind of bizarre to think that you would be reading something that's not actually written by the person writing it. But Jane feels terrible about it because she's a human being with a conscience, and she calls Emma and leaves her a message to apologize, and Emma posts the apology on Twitter. And so sorry, not sorry, Jane Sloan becomes this trending hashtag on Twitter, and they like remixed it into a song, and like everyone's just like calling her out and hating on her. Jane goes into work, and this is the scene that really hit home for me, where I was like, I felt like Jane should have known then not to trust her boss. She walks into her boss's office and her boss is listening to the remixed version of Jane's voicemail apology.
I'm like, you shady.
And doesn't even seem embarrassed about it. I mean, she looks up and sees Jane and kind of smiles and closes her computer. Like she just meant to be listening to it when Jane walks in. And I'm like, Jacqueline would have never done that. Jacqueline would never. So she tells her that she set up an interview for her to fix the whole thing, has her rehearse what she's going to say. Again, just trying to look out for Insight and not looking out for Jane specifically. Jane goes on and she does what Jane does best. She ends up, you know, speaking her mind. It ends in her being fired from Insight. Yeah.
So there are two sort of commentaries taking place with Jane's storyline. The first is what female mentorship should not look like. The editor clearly used her power to exploit Jane, to sell papers, you know, to sell the magazine. And then the other commentary we get is a commentary on the state of journalism, because Insight is sort of trying to market itself as accurate, fact-based, hard-hitting journalism. But if it was accurate journalism, they would have gone with Jane's original story.
Exactly.
Instead, they went with the headline that was going to get the most clicks. So clickbait journalism and how that's transforming journalists from the inside out. I hope that Jacqueline takes Jane back.
But maybe
Jane needs to do something else on her own and figure out a way to bounce back without having Jacqueline there to save her.
To be fair, I wouldn't see it as Jacqueline saving her. I mean, because Jane is very well qualified for that role. And I think that Jacqueline would be, you know, lucky to have her back. I mean, I agree that Jane may have some sort of soul searching to do before just rushing back to like a cushy job that she knows so well, both Sutton and Kat point out that, you know, they expect that her new boss at Insight will have her back just like Jacqueline did.
So the other thing that we're finding out when that this storyline continues to reveal about Jane is her naivete. She believes so much in people.
Yeah.
And she believes so much in women. So the episode's called Rose-Colored Glasses, and mm-hmm. it was about how Kat has been sort of looking back on her race with rose-colored glasses, and she chose to keep those glasses on. Jane has a pair of glasses on, too.
Yeah.
She's sort of afraid to see the grittiness of the real world. And so I think of the three of them, Jane is the most naive.
Yeah, absolutely. Sutton has taken the glasses off. She took them off a while ago.
Sutton doesn't have glasses on, okay? And I think some of it, which I hope that they address in this season, is Sutton's working class background, that she has to work for everything and that she's not willing to take chances on her professional reputation because she knows what it's like out there. And she knows that people will gossip and she knows X, Y, and Z. So I think Sutton is the most, I think, attuned to the real world compared to Jane and Kat. But mm-hmm. Jane has a lot to learn.
I know. I'm excited to see what's going to happen to all three of them. And I like it because I previously watched Pretty Little Liars, also primarily for the queer character. and then, you know, I was kind of like...
Also on Freeform, right?
Yeah, also on Freeform. So, like, you know, Emily was the queer character, and she was fun to watch and all that. But I felt like a lot of times I was just so bored by the other storylines. I would literally just like go on my phone like when their scenes came on because I didn't care what they were doing. I just felt like it was wasting screen time, you know? And and in this show, I'm not like necessarily bored during their scenes, you know? I was a little bit bored in season one when Jane was still seeing Pinstripe or whatever his real name was. I was interested to see how that story was going to develop and just hoping that it would turn out the way that it inevitably did. Mm-hmm. Basically, I like these girls, and no man is good enough for them, but...
Yeah, Adina is the only one too good for any of them.
Yes. But...
Let's be real, okay?
Oh, woo! My God.
Also, can we get Adina to have a storyline independent of Kat? Because I'm down for that.
Yeah, now that she's a series regular, I feel like I can hope for that. I feel like I'm allowed to get my expectations up and hope for that because, you know, she can't just completely revolve around Kat. I feel like she's not going to have enough to do to be a regular if that's all her storyline is.
I want Adina to get her own storyline. I want to know more about Oliver. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about Alex. Let's give him a meaty storyline. And then I want to know way more about Jacqueline.
I love Jacqueline. If I had to choose a sugar mama, it would be a mix of like Jacqueline and Carol.
Oh,
from the movie Carol.
Oh my God. Like, y'all don't understand my disappointment. When we went back, when she invited Jane to her house and I saw that she had a husband, I was like, no, no, you're destroying my fantasy. I want her to be queer too. I want her to be queer. Oh, maybe like Adina and Jacqueline deserve each other. Is there fanfic for that?
There's a thought.
Like,
Jadina, I think, would be the
the
ship name. Let's start that.
Okay, yeah. I like this. I think Jacqueline and Adina are power queers. I would say that Kat is a power queer because she's still a gaby. You know,
yeah, she's figuring her stuff out. She might get there. She might. Yeah. But like, you know, we know who the top is for now, so.
Yeah.
Let's not lie.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. So anyways, this has been awesome, our first episode. We've talked about two full episodes of The Bold Type. I don't know what's going to happen in the next few episodes, but I'm excited about where the characters are going.
Okay. Well, for anybody listening, thank you so much. We will try to keep this a regular podcast. We're going to aim for weekly so that we can cover, you know, all the shows that we're watching and go over them and also go over, you know, shows and films of the past as they come up. So
yeah, let us know what you think. You can tweet at me at Aphrodite or send us your questions or ideas for what we should talk about next.
Yeah, absolutely. Please, we would love to hear from you.
All right.
That's it for us. Yeah. And we will see you next time.